Kelly, this is going to be the last episode for the year. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
You are now tuned in to the Wisco Weekly Experience.
Chicken brown, chicken brown cow. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Wisco Weekly. This is going to be one of our last episodes, probably the last episode of 2018. And first off, so in thinking back of how far we've come, so it was about last year at this time that I was doing this podcast solo. And while I was doing it solo, in the background, I was searching for a co-host. And so therefore, then I sought out my good friend, my habitual leaser, my very intelligent attorney friend, Kelly Cruz, to serve as a co-host. So this really, Kelly, for you, is your one-year anniversary of the Wisco Weekly podcast.
I'm shedding a tear. No, thank you, Dennis.
That's because you're just hammered right now.
I am not.
Well, Kelly, again, for you, this would mark a one-year anniversary. The Wisco Weekly podcast celebrated our 1 year last month in November, although there was nothing special I actually did to celebrate that. But that's besides the point here. And the reason why we're not celebrating any of that stuff, because there's something much bigger going on than us right now, Kelly, and that is deals that are going on in December.
It's a big time of year for the deals.
It's a very big time, and I'm sure you're going to be sharing some of the deals that you were witnessing and you were negotiating, and finally the deal that you consummated.
Deal is a particular term, Dennis.
Yeah, fair enough. So in hindsight, last year about this time, I actually had I recorded an episode called Deal Making in December. And there were a couple points that I had made on there that I believe would resonate as still true to this day. So one of the things is, first off, there are deals to be had in the month of December. I'll explain that in a little bit. The other thing, the speed of deals usually ends up quicker. There is an asterisk on that. And again, we'll get to that in a little bit. Another thing. Deals in December, usually there's not a whole lot of options that customers are able to choose in terms of colors, in terms of features on a car. One of the reasons for that is that by the time you visit a dealer and you're, as a customer, if you're looking for your ideal car, well, what you want, it could be out in existence, but the reality is a dealer doesn't want to expend the time to try to get that car for you. So they'd rather try to broker a great deal for you, lower the price, things of that nature, in order to buy something they have on the lot. So those were some of the things that were going on last year when I recorded an episode, and they were definitely going on in decades prior to that. Even though I haven't been in the car business that long, that's just the general nature of the car business. You know, one of the things too that's kind of a misnomer, Kelly, is the idea of losing a car to make a deal, losing a car, you know, not losing a car, but losing money on a car to make a deal, or losing money on a car in order to make quota. I'm sure you've heard that before. Oh, yeah. So again, ladies and gentlemen, Kelly went through her own buying experience this past week or so now. She's been in the process for probably the last month, month and a half. So we're going to get to some of the things that she went through. But, you know, the November sales numbers have just been published. And, you know, there's a couple things I wanted to kind of highlight. One of the things is that General Motors, even though they've laid off 25,000 people and counting, even though they publish numbers on a quarterly basis, they are still leading the all other manufacturers in the United States, having sold approximately, again, they haven't published these numbers just yet, but according to sources at Automotive News, in the month of November alone, they were just shy of 250,000 cars, new cars sold. For the year, they're looking at 2.6 million. Honda is down actually 9.5% for the year. So one of the things that could be interpreted off of that are that there are deals to be made. Asterisks on that. Kelly, I'm sure, will enlighten us as she did get a Honda. Something interesting I always look at is Tesla. Tesla is a little bit more on a set schedule of production since most of their cars being produced at the moment are the Model 3s. And because they had so many pre-orders, they're just looking to fulfill those orders. So right now, last month and this month, they have sold just shy of 22,000 Tesla cars. And surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, that number has surpassed Audi in terms of monthly volume. Audi in the month of November has only sold 17,000 new cars. Other manufacturers that would be in contention or at least competitors to Tesla would be Mercedes and BMW. And they have sold more than Tesla in the month of November. Again, Tesla did just shy of 22,000. BMW just did just shy of 32,000. And Mercedes did just shy of 33,000. Now, at or around this time, it always happens to be the case that BMW and Mercedes will battle it out so that they can be crowned the highest volume manufacturer in the United States. And at the moment, if you look at what their new sales volume is in 2018, 11 months into 2018, Mercedes has sold 319,000 Mercedes cars, new cars, and BMW 318. And to be exact, again, according to Automotive News, Mercedes is 319,159. And BMW is 318,534. So just a difference of 600 cars.
Yep.
So 600 cars separate the two. So what does that mean? That means if you are looking for a BMW or Mercedes in this month of December, man, you can get a sweet deal because they want to be crowned, you know, winner of 2018 of highest volume. So just be mindful of that. Before we get into Kelly's car buying story, when you hear that music, you know what time it is. Ladies and gentlemen, of course, it's our resident automation expert, Andy Aceman, here to talk about what's going on in automation in the field of automotive. Andy, what's going on, man?
How are you guys? Great to talk to you.
What's new?
Oh man, so much is new, but right off the bat, right at the top, have you guys heard about GM's president moving over from his role as president into the chief executive officer for Cruise Automation? Now, Cruise is working very closely with GM right now, as GM is a major shareholder, but that's not all that's going on. Honda has also bought 5.7% of the company and has pledged over $2 billion over the next 12 years to go to Cruise Automation. And all of this news comes hot on the heels of Cruise being crowned the most wreckingest, if that's a good term, automated car company in North America, with 56 car accidents in this past year, far surpassing Waymo, Tesla, any of the others combined. And I got to tell you guys, I'm stunned that you would have a major company like GM go in there and just say, listen, everybody, in order to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. And that's what we're doing. We're logging miles, we're getting the seat time, and we're trying to go out there and figure out what different situations these cars can get into and what they need to do. And what's shocking to me is that there have been so many wrecks, considering they've logged just about 131,000 miles on California roads. Now, consider this. Waymo is up into the 10 million miles. But you do have to take into account that that is in Arizona. It's not in busy California. So what is going to happen? Time will tell, but I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on this incredible transition, this incredible faith that GM is putting into this automated company.
Well, you're absolutely right. Only time will tell, and that time is certainly coming as not only GM is committing now to this future of transportation, but you will see Ford doing this as well, as they're going to be announcing some massive amount of layoffs. And then, you know, one of the things too, Andy, was that Volvo, at the most recent LA Auto Show, or at least at the press conference, Volvo was, you know, they did something very bold, and that is at their press conference, they did not announce any new vehicles. What they really talked about was how Volvo is committed to the future of transportation and committed to autonomous cars, and how what they want to start to promote is how customers or their drivers will be able to just enjoy this 360 view of sitting in one of their cars working and just really enjoying the experience of being in a car. So GM, along with Ford, along with Volvo, along with all the other automakers, Honda, finally, I think we're starting to see the needle move a little bit into this whole connected autonomous vehicle future.
It is so true. And speaking of Volvo, one thing that they have really been trying to hammer down on is their self-driving trucks. We've spoken about this in a previous episode, how, in my opinion, the future of trucking is automated. Because if you can have someone, or rather not have someone that needs to be behind the wheel of that truck hauling your freight across the country, they don't need to take breaks. They don't have to stop to eat. If it's a fully self-driving vehicle, it can just go nonstop 24 hours a day. It'll get your package there in half the time if it's going across country. And so Volvo has really been trying to make some steps towards that. As a matter of fact, I think I'll go ahead and put a link up to some of these Volvo autonomous truck videos that they've been putting out recently, just so that you guys can get a good idea, a good visual of what I'm talking about. I mean, they are really, really trying to make this a reality.
Well, it certainly, I firmly believe, and obviously I don't think it's just me, but if there is a greater adoption of autonomous vehicles, it will have to start with businesses, with commercial enterprises. And in order for commercial enterprises to, to implement an autonomous vehicle, using the existing infrastructure, such as highways, is the most, or is at least the probably the easiest way to put autonomous vehicles on the road, because certainly if you were to go into any metropolitan city, be much harder for an autonomous vehicle to operate within city streets, as there's just too many unknowns due to human activity.
I 100% agree.
Well, Andy, thank you again for your information on what's going on with GM. We will check back with you again here soon.
It's always great to talk to you guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Andy. It was good talking to you.
Okay, Kelly, so let's talk about your car buying journey. So you had a Toyota Sienna that accommodates the family, you, your husband, and your two kids. And you did a 3-year, 12,000-mile lease on that Toyota Sienna, in which you were slightly under miles. And you were looking around at another van, kind of looking at the Chrysler Pacifica, although not sold on it. And so at the end of the day, you're like, you know what? I'm a Toyota customer. I might as well look at Toyota and get the new Sienna van.
Right.
Recap for me. What happened?
Sure. So this was an interesting one. As you said, I'm a habitual leaser and had a lot of different experiences, but this one has kind of ranked on the top of the experiences. So we started the process of looking at the Sienna, reached out through a couple different avenues. One was a Facebook post to some dealerships, reached out through the Costco Auto Program, which we talked about on a prior episode, just to see how that would go, and reached out to some dealerships directly. The it turned out that the numbers on the Sienna were much different today than they were 3 years ago. I would say by far the Costco Auto Program, I will highlight, the process itself was very easy. Going through the website, filling out a few pieces of information, hitting submit, you get connected to a local dealership. And in the case of the Sienna, they came back pretty quickly with a pricing sheet and gave you the sticker price, the MSRP, the invoice cost, and then your selling price as a Costco preferred member. And so the pricing itself looked great, well below invoice price. But when it came to buying or leasing, again, it just seems at this point Toyota didn't have great incentives specifically on the Sienna. So long story short, we started looking at a different route. And so we started considering the Honda Odyssey, went through a similar process in terms of the way that we got numbers and reached out directly to some dealerships, local dealerships, and also again through the Costco buying program. And this is where things got interesting.
Hmm.
So with the Siennas, the dealerships that responded came back with, again, that pricing sheet and very transparent. Honda, we had to select which dealership we wanted to go with. They said, here are your options. And we chose one. And that dealership called and basically said, when do you want to come in? And I, as I've mentioned on prior episodes, my comment to them is always, I want to see numbers. I don't want to come in. He said, oh, no. He said, with the Costco Auto Program, we never give numbers over the phone or through email. And I said, you know, we started this process with the Sienna and I got numbers. He said, no, Honda is very strict about this. We do not give numbers. Well, again, come to find out from another Honda dealership, they were willing to give numbers. So clearly this dealership was just trying to get us in the door. But I bought it. Even after all my experiences, I went with it. And I thought, I'm going to go in and hopefully it's going to be a good enough deal that it'll make it worth it. And I let him know ahead of time, like, look, I don't want to waste your time. Don't want to waste my time. You know, and he said, nope, come in within 30 minutes. I'll give you the pricing. If it doesn't work, you can be out the door. If it works, you know, great. We'll get the deal done very quickly. Well, to go to the punchline, we ended up being at the dealership for over 5 hours. We got there and it was not, here's the pricing right away. It was, you know, let's look at the cars. I need to understand what color you want. I don't know if we want to go into the specific dealership. I will just say they were not very prepared. We had made an appointment and I had given very specific information of what we were looking for, including through the Costco program and direct emails. And we showed up and his first question was, what car are you looking for?
It was the same guy you were communicating via email with too.
Yes. And I had sent multiple direct emails to say, we have a Sienna currently that we're looking to get out of, or we can turn in the lease. We're looking to get in this exact model car. We want a Honda Odyssey EXL, possibly with navigation and rear entertainment. Doesn't have to be. We're either going to buy or do a 36-month lease. We'll want to see numbers on both. But again, we show up and it's, what's your name and what car are you looking for? So right there, it was a bit of a turnoff, a lot of a turnoff. He was tied up with some other things. So we ended up waiting for about 30 minutes before we really got into the conversation. He wanted to get a bunch of factual information and data and driver's license and all of that. And I said, I'm not giving social security numbers, no credit checks. No, we won't do that. We're just trying to get the process started for you. Eventually, he got up to walk away and I said, I need the numbers. We've been here for an hour and a half. He pulls out the Costco pricing sheet and I had already gotten some numbers directly through a dealership without the Costco program that was closer to our house. And the numbers with the Costco Auto Program in this case were higher. I immediately said, this is not even close to what we're looking for. On top of that, we were trying to turn in the Sienna. We were on a lease with the Sienna. And prior to even seeing the numbers, he had asked to go look at the Sienna and came back and said, you're well underwater. We don't want the Sienna. Basically, turn it back into the dealership. And here's the numbers on the car, which, again, were higher than what I'd already received without the Costco Auto Program. So I said, this is not even close to what we're looking for. We're done. Oh, and then all of a sudden I got the, wait, let's talk more. So he proceeds to do a second inspection of the Sienna and magically came back and said they decided they really want the car because his used car salesman has looked at it and now decided that it's an amazing car and they'd like to buy it. And now it's magically worth $2,000 more than it was the first time around. And I usually don't like to lay the cards on the table of the exact price that I need. But I said, look, I have numbers from another dealership. And unless you can beat this excessively, or I don't even want to sit here and argue, like, you've already wasted time. Well, they came back fairly quickly with numbers to beat what the other dealership had provided. At that point, we've been there for 3+ hours. And it's like, I just want to get the car and go home. So we ended up making a deal. You know, we waited probably an hour and a half to get into finance. Once we got into finance, we were done in 15 minutes, which was shocking. Usually finance takes a long time as well. But again, it was just...
Let me ask you this. How much of the... At the end of the day, once the deal was consummated, because you were citing Costco, how much of that entire process would you attribute to the dealership versus Costco in terms of, you know, the overall experience of it?
I think, unfortunately, in this case, again, with the Siennas, the total buying price and
Sienna
the
or Odyssey?
I was going back to when we started the process with okay. Sienna mm-hmm. and seeing the selling price, I think in other years where, again, maybe the incentives were better, we could have had a great experience using the Costco pricing. With the Odyssey, because we went in and the pricing didn't match what I had elsewhere, the gentleman who was the Costco representative said, I basically can't help you. I have to go get someone else to help. I'm kind of under contract. I can't do anything further for you. And so it turned into a whole separate negotiation. So it was almost like we were worse off than if we had just started without the Costco Auto Program, at least at this particular dealership.
Okay, so... Let me be a slightly infuriated about this because, again, this actually does date back to the episode talking about the Costco Auto Program and how it's just sometimes a big jack-off session because there are some places, some stores, and particular people who are properly designated to represent Costco and the dealership to abide by the rules as set forth by the agreement between Costco and the dealership mm-hmm. to say, hey, this is the price. Show me your membership card. This is what you get. And then, you know, as our good friend Hunter Swift says, you even get like this, additional incentive to Costco to shop $200 or something of that nature. Yeah.
We're waiting for our cash back that we're supposed to get.
We'll okay. So you're that. Still waiting for that. On the other hand, though, because Costco, the auto program is so watered down, you will have a lot of sales guys, salespeople, sales non-professionals game the system that say, hey, we can't give you the number, so you got to come into the store and then we'll give it to you. And then again, then it's like, well, okay, so you've abided by what this alleged Costco representative has communicated to you. You show up and they have no idea that who you are and what you're looking for. So on top of all of this now, right, now you're at the store. So, you know, this kind of gets back to what I was saying earlier, the speed of deals, where obviously you can attest to the fact that, like, when you said that this is not the deal you're looking for mm-hmm. and that you were quoted something else, the speed of the deal itself happened pretty quickly. Right. He did come back to you. And even though it was now viewed as like a separate negotiation or separate deal, it did happen fairly quickly.
Right. The first hour and a half was looking at a car, waiting for him because he was finishing up with another customer, giving him factual information to enter into the computer. And so really it was at that point that the numbers game started.
OK, so to go back to what I was saying then earlier, in the first part. The speed of the deal happens quicker. However, the time at the dealership, that is one of the unfortunate downsides about this time of year. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons for it is, you know, it's, I'd like to say that there's more demand than the supply, but no, there's plenty of supply. If anything, you know, this is more akin to like binging, binge drinking, binge eating, whatever you want to call it, right? Mm-hmm. You go to a dealership and when dealership sales professionals communicating with you, it's like they're being inundated with so many leads, so many referrals, so many walk-ins that it's just, it's binging for them. So then when you come into the store and it's like, oh, hi, what's your name? Kelly, we had an appointment at 10 o'clock and I'm here at 9:55. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, what are you here to see? This is the byproduct, maybe not the byproduct, but the downside of what happens in December. Mm-hmm. For as much as it is a great time to show up at your family Christmas party, to a New Year's Eve party in your shiny new toy, it is a laborious process to get to that point because in the month of December, while deals are made pretty quickly, the experience at a dealership is still elongated because there's just, the dealership is just inundated with customers.
Right.
And, you know, if anything, perhaps the bright side in all this is that you did make an appointment to see your sales guy, right? Where a lot of times it happens where you may show up ready to buy because you can feel the energy of everyone else in the store and you see all these deals happening. You're like, damn it, I'm getting my car today too.
Right.
But then it's like you talk to the receptionist and you're like, hey, yeah, I'd like to see an Odyssey. And they're like, sure, have a seat right over there and we'll get right to you. And 5 minutes pass and 10 minutes pass and 15 and 20 and 30 minutes pass. And finally you get helped. And it's like you've kind of, you're deflated by them.
Right. Make an appointment.
Okay. So you know, listeners, this is one of the key takeaways of making or buying a car in December is make an appointment. It still may not be picture perfect as Kelly has described, but because dealers do get inundated with customers, you are better off to make an appointment so that there is somewhat of an expectation of your visit.
Yep.
Fair to say?
Fair.
Okay. Now, question. Was it a he?
It was a he, and his name was Dennis.
No.
Yes. Defaming the name. He only had one N in his name.
He is defaming. He must be European. Okay. Anyhow. So did he use the line, we're losing money to sell you this car?
No. I mean, there was a lot of lines. I'm sure I could think of all the different lines that were used. I mean, everything from we got to a negotiating point and it was like, we'll split the deal with you. And it was over dollars at this point. And it was almost like split the difference. Sorry. And again, we're talking dollars where it was almost like you couldn't just come back with the number. Mm-hmm. You know, they just needed a little something more out of it. While we were trying to think about whether to make the deal, he looks at his phone. This is not the Costco representative. This is the used car salesperson who was now looking at the Sienna and who supposedly had to, like, you know, help make the deal. And he said, oh my gosh, everyone's been looking for the black on the outside with the gray interior. We can't get that anywhere. I have someone on the phone that asked me if I have it, but I told them I'm with a customer who's buying it. It was like, you know. And you know, they kept saying, you're getting a great deal on this car. And I said back, of course you're going to say I'm getting a great deal. Are you going to tell me I'm getting a bad deal on the car? They didn't like me very much by the end, but.
Well, which is probably why they used the line to split the difference, because realistically, knowing you and knowing your habits, that is the best way to essentially make the deal. Because it's almost as if they would have said yes to agreeing to your terms and conditions, then it's like, she's not going to stop. She's going to keep asking, which you might have. And look, I probably would have done the same. It's like, oh, well, okay, you gave me whatever, $550 on my payment, and that's what I asked for. Well, throw in floor mats, throw in this, throw in that. So that is a tactic by the dealer. And so hopefully you see this now that mm-hmm. what they're trying to do is that it's like, okay, this is a shrewd negotiator. We can't give her what she wants. We just have to meet her halfway so that there is this understanding that this is where it's, this is where the buck stops.
Mm-hmm.
So it, that's a tried and true negotiation tactic. And unfortunately, or fortunately, it worked, but
For the couple of dollars I was willing to take it. It was more of, you know,
exactly
a slap in the face that like they wouldn't go for it, but I get why.
How about in terms of inventory? Were you looking at a option? Well, the thing is, I guess with Hondas, they're pretty much cookie cutter, so it kind of makes it a little bit easy, no?
Yeah, I mean, they have five models on the Odysseys. Mm. Again, we knew that we wanted the mid model. Just based on price point and the features in the car, we did want the rear entertainment system, but without upgrading to the next model that's substantially higher, you're just basically adding on $2,000 to the car, and it forces you to get navigation. So, you know, just based on pricing, we weren't willing to pay the extra for that feature, and so it was very specific. We knew we wanted black, white, or gray, and so after looking at the gray and the black, we just chose the black.
Okay, that makes it easy. Okay. We're going to finish up. So just a quick recap. Kelly had a not so pleasant experience, a long process to contact dealers, to be misled, not have expectations met either by the dealer themselves or by a third party lead provider, as in Costco. And, you know, if anything, I'm actually quite surprised that you decided to go along with a dealer that said, hey, we won't give you a number. You have to come in the store, because that actually plays exactly into what the dealer wants you to do, which, hey, look, kudos to the dealer, because that's, in a lot of ways, that is a practice that is maybe even an art that is starting to lose ground, and for those that will still, you know, for customers that still will succumb to that, you know, kudos to you, because, you know, someone like Kelly was able to come to your store and you sold her a car, and, you know, great for you guys. But we're still going to kind of learn about some of the other different lessons that Kelly has learned out of this car buying experience. We're going to take a call right now from one of our listeners.
We have Jonah, age 37, from San Francisco, California. So, Jonah, we understand you have a question about car buying. How can we help?
I do. So I've had my car now for a good almost 15 years, a 2004 Corolla, and I'm actually looking to see whether a luxury vehicle or a different vehicle would be better suited for my current lifestyle, since I was 22 when I first got my car.
Got a lot of miles on that car.
Actually, not so many. It's only 104,000 miles last I checked. So I don't drive very often, but I've literally only driven one car my entire life. So I don't even know really the difference between a luxury car versus what I have. I mean, it's more of my good old faithful car. But from what I understand, a lot has changed in the last 15 years.
But you want to get into a luxury car?
I do.
Is there any car that tickles your fancy as you see cars on the road?
Well, so I'm super short. I'm only 5 foot tall. And so I thought a crossover would be a good change of pace, so I can be a little higher. Because again, since I drive a kind of a small sedan, I feel I'm always like at the bottom of things. And so I was hoping to get something a little bit bigger. And yeah, so I've been looking at more luxury crossovers.
And so it's been quite a while since you've had a car, and I presume a car payment. What do you have in mind in terms of your method of payment for this car? Are you going to finance? Are you going to pay cash? Are you going to lease?
To be honest with you, I haven't had the opportunity to test drive any cars, so I feel like jumping into owning a car right away would be a little bit premature, since I haven't been able to test drive any car. So I was thinking more of a lease. I actually don't know too many other people that have, but those that have told me that that's the way to go. Just because like this technology is changing again all the time. So it's kind of like a great feeling to be able to experience a new car every few years. So it's just, I actually don't know very much about the process at all.
When it comes to leasing, there's really, in my eyes, the two biggest benefits of leasing are, one, you get more car for your money. And the second thing is you don't have to worry about the headaches of ownership of maintenance because of quote unquote owning the car. So since typically when you lease a car, you're doing it under a set term, which is usually under 4 years. Typically most people are leasing right around 3 years or 36 months. And manufacturer warranties they cover you, bumper to bumper. Of course, if there's normal wear and tear, if you blow a tire or if you get into an accident, then those are considered normal wear and tear items. And just as much as if you with your Corolla now, if you get into an accident or if you blow a tire, you have to get that fixed. You will still have to do that in a lease. So for starters, that is kind of the two points I want to emphasize to you. Does that make sense?
No, totally. And actually, I think that makes complete sense. And I guess the only other question I have, given that I've again had my car for 15 years, I am clearly a loyalist. If I were to say fall in love with the vehicle, would I have the option to buy it?
Good question. You would have the option to buy it. So the way that it works when you lease a car is you're paying the I don't want to get too financial here, but you're paying the depreciation on the car for a set amount of time. So let's just kind of, are you a mathlete?
I wouldn't call myself a mathlete, but I understand numbers.
Okay. So, so let's just say you have a $40,000 car. A lot of times, what will end up happening is that if you lease a $40,000 car, you will just pay the depreciation. So let's just call it $20,000. And again, I'm going to use a very simplified model here. So that $20,000 you will break up into 36 months or 3 years. So you'll pay that plus interest plus sales tax. But since you're only paying the depreciation on the car, there is that leftover amount, which is called the residual value. That residual then you can pay for when you are done with your lease. So, and this is actually a good question because one of the big misnomers is that, oh, well, if I lease a car, I don't own it. Well, that's not true because you do have the option to own this car at the very end of the lease. You have three options as you get towards the end of your lease. You can walk away from it. So you can simply just turn it back into the dealership. Usually there's a small disposition fee. Depending on which automaker you go with, usually it's, call it under $1,000. It's usually, right around $500. So at the very end of 36 months, you say, hey, you know what? This was a great ride, but this wasn't for me. You return it back to the manufacturer. The manufacturer says, hey, or you turn it back to the dealer. Dealer says, okay, hey, give us $500 and we'll process all the paperwork and you're out of it. Your second option is you can buy the car. So again, just as we explained earlier, you have that residual amount left over that you can then either look to secure your own financing, or a dealership can provide you financing, or you could pay cash for it. I hear you're a baller. Or the third option is you can also then trade your car so that you can go essentially to another manufacturer. Now, trading your car works a little bit differently, or it's a little bit more complicated in this sense, but it's certainly an option available to you. So again, another benefit to leasing is you do have all these three options available.
Yeah, that actually sounds pretty good, to be honest with you, in terms of leasing. But when you mentioned returning it to the dealership, is it the exact dealership that you actually have the contract with, or is it any other type of dealership? Does it have to be the same location?
It does not have to be the same location. When you are returning the car to a dealership, one of the things that would be advisable, and every automaker will offer this to you, not necessarily the dealer, but the automaker, they will encourage you to do a third-party inspection of the car. And that's free. So then essentially it's like, so let's just say December 31st, your lease ends. So what you'd want to do is you'd want to say, hey, you know, let's just say in this case, again, you have a Toyota and you're leasing this Toyota. So, you know, December 31st, your lease ends, or as the proper terminology is, that it matures. You would want to schedule a third party inspection of the car. It's a complimentary inspection done by Toyota, which basically what they tell you is, hey, Jonah, your car has, you know, you have this really big scratch, which that's going to cost you about $300 to get fixed. You can either do that yourself or just know that that's what you're going to have to pay in addition to your disposition. You know, and as I talk about some of the wear and tear, right, there is normal wear and tear covered as part of a lease. So, you know, one of the rules of thumb is if you get a scratch in your car and it's the size of a credit card or smaller, usually that's forgiven. If somehow you pissed off your ex-boyfriend and he decided to key your car from end to end, then yeah, that's going to cost you a pretty penny. Similarly, if your bumper is...
Then I would stick my brothers on them, right? Basically.
There okay, you, got it. And your father. All the men in your life.
Oh, yeah. My dad's actually scarier than both of them. That's true.
There you go.
And then on top of that, I would just say some of the dealerships, such as Honda, also have an additional allowance. So even if you have certain markings that are larger than this, we'll say credit card example, they may say, we'll give you another $500 allowance. And as long as kind of all of the damage doesn't add up to more than that, you don't have to pay anything out of pocket.
Got it. And knock on wood, to be honest with you, literally, since I've had this car, I do not have anything bigger than the credit card in regards to having damage on my car. So like, I literally take care of my car like as much as I can.
Pretty unusual for having a car that long and living in San Francisco.
Like, seriously, it's ridiculous. Well, it's called parking. But yes, to that point, like I do take care of my car, so I don't have anything. So I'm not super worried about extreme wear and tear, but the normal wear and tear, it's good to know that for the most part that would be covered.
Well, Jonah, leasing is definitely going to be a great way to go about getting into a new car and testing out what is current these days. You know, just kind of a full disclaimer here, the downside in leasing, there is a downside in leasing. And, you know, Kelly may not fully agree with this, but she will certainly she will certainly understand this. The downside of leasing is that it becomes an addiction because you do end up leasing car after car after car. And so, you know, if again, as a mathlete, then if you were to compare a 5-year loan on a car versus a 5-year lease, you will start to see that you are paying more for a car over a set amount of time. And, you know, to that end too, you know, one of the options you had asked was, you know, could you buy the car or can you own the car at the end of a lease? You certainly can. And just know that, again, if you were to do the math, more than likely, this doesn't always happen, but 95% of the time, if you look at what you have spent to buy that car, if you financed it versus if you leased and then bought it out after, you are going to be paying a couple thousand dollars more for that same car over a set amount of time.
Is there kind of a statistic, Dennis, in terms of the percentage? Like, where are you generally paying 10% more of the car price, 5%, or it's not that, you know, across the board?
I would say you're probably looking at least 10%. I say 10 to 15%.
If you buy out the car.
You buy out the car.
Right.
And, you know, so I would say at minimum, you know, 10 to 15%. What would increase that percentage would be things like credit. You know, so if your credit wasn't as good and then you don't have, you know, 2% financing, you have 10% financing. So that would definitely, the price of the car, you know, if all of a sudden you're not looking at a $40,000 car, you're looking at a $140,000 car, then all that stuff adds up.
Right.
I'm not that fancy. I don't even know what a $140,000 car looks like. But no, I appreciate the question. That's great. Only because, like, as I mentioned, like, I mean, I understand the addiction to wanting to continue the lease after you've started. And I don't know. Maybe that's going to be the case. It's just really hard for me to predict the future when, again, I've just been so comfortable with this car. It's kind of hilarious.
Jonah, I think you will have a great experience leasing new cars. It sounds like, it sounds like you're in a great financial position to experience, you know, brand new technology. I'm actually curious though, on your end, in San Francisco, because parking and traffic is, you know, pervasive, what are your thoughts with regards to like ride sharing and just driverless cars? Do you see yourself, accepting that way of life at all?
In terms of ride sharing, I do appreciate the flexibility of being able to go to my place of work and back. And to be honest with you, I don't have a lot of mileage, as you can see from the fact that I've only have 104,000 miles. But I think, yeah, so generally speaking, like, I like the flexibility. And so it's only like 13 miles to work and back. And so that's not super big deal to me. And driverless, I've never actually thought about that. So can you elaborate a little bit on that concept?
So Jonah, we look forward. We actually want to get into that on another call. We can talk about that more. No, not at all. We definitely want to talk further, but this was a great time to learn more about what you're looking for in a car, and we look forward to hearing how it goes. So definitely give us a call back so we can hear how everything plays out.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, thanks, Jonah.
So Kelly, I like this momentum that we're building here, where you yourself have leased this van. Jonah will become a first-time leaser herself. And now, as we kind of wrap up some of the takeaways of you being a co-host on this podcast and knowing, you know, being exposed to the automotive industry, the transportation industry, the car business, share with me some of your takeaways then from this most recent buying experience.
Sure. So I think, as you touched on earlier, one of the most important is make an appointment. Once you've chosen the car, find a local dealership, maybe after you've done some research, but make an appointment wherever you're going to go in to make the deal. Second would be take advantage of any opportunities you have through existing memberships such as Costco or AAA. I think it can work in your favor potentially. And again, it's an easy process to at least use that program to get numbers, but make sure that you get them in writing. You want them to send you an email if possible with that pricing. And third would be know what questions to ask. Be an informed buyer. And so whether you're calling into a podcast like ours or you're talking to someone who's familiar with the car buying process, have a list of, let's say 5-6 questions for leasing versus buying, and make sure that you get your questions answered before you make a deal.
And, Kelly, I know this is going to be self-serving when you plugged our podcast, but it really is absolutely true. I mean, be it Jonah or Doris or Margaret or other people that we've helped out on the show, like, we just truly have a genuine interest of wanting to be that guide on the side for people who just don't do this on a regular basis. And it certainly is very important that it's very important. And this is going to sound perhaps, too lofty, almost like I'm trying to position myself to be like the savior of the car business, but it is extremely important to me that customers, as they visit and as they buy cars, have the best experience as possible. And it's not going to be perfect. I understand that, but it can be as good as possible if you do have information on your side, if you do go through the process of setting an appointment, of stating your demands, of being transparent about your intentions. And then, as you do go and you're visiting the store, just knowing what questions to ask, like, those kinds of things are absolutely needed in order to have a good experience. And again, because in December, because deals happen very quickly, although the experience may take very long, because everyone at this time does want to get a car, it's vitally important to go through this process, to ask these questions, to seek additional consultations. And I can't tell you how many people, you know, off the air that are constantly emailing me, texting me, calling me, you know, previous clients of mine that just want a 5-minute conversation. And I'm more than happy to lend that to them for the sake of ensuring that they have a great experience at these dealerships. Because, you know, and I don't want to get too far into this, but look, dealership operations are going to be changing significantly over the next 10 years, maybe 5 years. And that starts to get into some of the things that we've talked about already in terms of transportation, in terms of ride sharing, in terms of car ownership going down. So up until that point, it starts now in order to shape this future to having car buyers, car owners, and eventually drivers adapt to this changing environment to hopefully something that is not so much product centric, that is so, you know, that's controlled by the automaker, controlled by the dealer, but that is now more customer centric. That's more like, hey, I as a customer, as a driver, as a citizen of the community, these are my needs. This is what I want. This is what fits in my lifestyle. That is what we are trying to do with this podcast, Kelly. And so it's, you know, again, it's unfortunate you had to go through your experience, but you know, you and I we're kind of the sacrificial lambs. So hopefully other people don't have to go through this kind of experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll just say briefly that even as an informed buyer, I felt pressure. And so I would say that when you're in that situation, if you do find yourself at the dealership and you don't have the numbers in hand that you're already comfortable with, and they present you with a sheet of options and numbers, ask them to give you a moment. Have the person step away and just sit there, and you can either do a calculation, you can phone a friend, a call in during your car buying experience and ask. And if you're not comfortable, you leave. The car's still going to be there, even though you may feel like you want to get the deal done, or at least feel like, you know, you understand what the deal is before you sign the papers.
Such a great, great, you know, advice right there. Just take a moment to let everything sink in and digest and not feel pressured to do anything. Again, at the end of the day, this is a material possession, a car. You don't really need it, especially if it's not a particular color combination or option, or if there's nothing exclusive about that car. You don't have to make that decision right then and there. So listeners, you know, the other thing too is, if you want to take a moment and you want to follow us on Facebook or send us a message on Facebook, myself or Kelly, we will get back to you and we will try to do the best we can just to, again, support you. That's all we're looking to do. We have no other interest other than supporting you and making sure that you feel good about what you're doing. So while this may not be the most positive thing to end on, it certainly was a journey this year in 2018. We got a lot of great things coming to you in 2019. So stay tuned. Be sure to follow us along on Facebook. Be sure to subscribe on any popular podcast app. And Kelly, how do we end every episode?
Cheers.
Prost.
L'chaim.
Kippish. Nastravi. Salud. Kampai. Mabruk. Tutsint. Gambe. Yamas.
To the customer experience.